I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 451. Hint for winning, make good life choices.
Sister.
And I am Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hey, hey, hey.
How you doing?
I am pleasantly wonderful. Right?
Yeah, I know you are. I know you are. Because somebody's been drinking and it's not me for once.
I've been drinking.
You've been drinking? Truth. But hey, that makes for some very interesting
podcasting. I'm over 21 and I'm allowed to because I'm an adult.
I wouldn't go that far, but you are over 21. I will say that you are, in fact, over 21.
So. I adult very well.
You adult on occasion, but...
Very well.
This podcast is not about your adulting abilities. Or your adulting abilities. Or even my adulting abilities. It's about nerdy stuff. It's about video games, anime, and fun stuff. So we have a bunch of video game and anime and fun stuff to talk about this week. And seeing as how, outside of our clip show, I kind of dominated our podcast full topic show. So I thought that maybe I would let you go first.
That would be wonderful.
And before we even did that we after that podcast, we had a meeting.
We had an intervention of sorts.
We had a meeting. And we set some new ground rules.
Some boundaries, if you will.
So a thing for you guys to know is that we have a new segment that we're doing on the show. And it'll come up later in the show. I think that it's fair. It's 5 minutes with Destiny with Ninja Sister. I have 5 minutes to talk about Destiny. I only have 5 minutes to talk about Destiny, and then that's it. So it's new. We're going to try it out later. I'm going to do my damnedest to stick to it.
Oh, no, you're sticking to it.
Because
there's no trying. There is only success.
And Pandalicious has a timer to keep me honest on those 5 minutes. So 5 minutes of Destiny, new segment on the show, only 5 minutes against the clock, if I could beat the clock.
Until Taken King releases, which is coming up soon.
All right, that doesn't count in my 5 minutes.
It does not.
So before we get to that segment, I have things that are not Destiny related to talk about. But Panda, I know that you've been playing some games lately, and I've been taking the mic of a thousand truths first a lot because it's my birthright as the firstborn.
Yeah.
But I'm going to share and let you go first for once.
For once.
Because thanks. I'm, you know, magnanimous like that.
You are.
Or something like that.
You are a magnanimous ruler in the land of Ash.
Oh, thank you.
You allow us beneath you to sometimes step into the light because
sometimes
we have something to contribute to the masses. And I personally, really concretely, want to talk about one core experience that I've had in the last 4 days.
Well, then share it with the people, Panda.
I'm planning to. So, through some happenstance, I was going through one of my favorite YouTubers who does Let's Plays, Markiplier, who...
Love Markiplier.
He is super amazing and super charitable and super humble, and he was talking about a game that I had seen advertisements for it in my Bloodborne copy, or rather, my boyfriend's Bloodborne copy.
Well, and you were really excited about it when it was teased at E3.
I figured it kind of screamed survival horror to me in the same vein that Heavy Rain was a psychological thriller.
Right.
It kind of had the same appeal that Beyond Two Souls kind of did in terms of its style and the animation and stuff and the technology they used for that uncanny valley realness, not realness that's going on in it. but they didn't give us too much then, and then I saw some advertisements for it, and then I happened to watch his channel, and he began playing it. Which my immediate response to that was, it's out already? Because initially it was being advertised, or at least when we first saw glimpses of it, it was going to be a PS3 game, and then the new console came out. So then it delayed, because apparently the Supermassive Games decided that they wanted to make it a PS4 exclusive. Which okay. they then went and did. Which is why we saw nothing about it until it finally debuted. And the minute he was playing it, I sought out and refused to pay a bill so that I could buy the game. Because it's a game completely up in my alley. So I went and found it, bought it, brought it home, and literally dived into this universe. Which, I was absolutely right. It has all the makings of Heavy Rain meets Beyond Two Souls meets psychological thriller, like kind of in the same vein as Alan Wake.
Okay.
With the horror aspects of all those great 90s horror movies that we've ever watched. Cabin in the Woods.
Okay. Yep.
It's got a big, heavy feel of that. And Joss Whedon was amazing with his version of Cabin in the Woods. But let me talk a little bit about the plot of the game and the mechanics of the game. So, Until Dawn is the name of the game, and it came out from Supermassive Games. And it is completely and utterly designed for multiple plays. You cannot get all the content in one single playthrough, so replayability is key and crucial in this game. The game highly focuses on the butterfly effect, which is this in-game system that they're using, that pretty much says that any choice that the player makes has an unseen consequence later on in the game. And we've seen games that have said, oh, all your choices make an impact. And sometimes we've seen it in a game and sometimes we haven't. Like in Heavy Rain, your choices when you were Jason's father, depending on how you got through your trials, you did see some ripple effect of its consequence in other players' games.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Other player segments in that game. But it wasn't as significant or insignificant in that. Like, clearly it was a clear choice of whether you did A or B. And A did one thing for one character, and B did another thing for another character. And somehow they all interwove and stitched the story together. And literally since picking up this game, I have played 5 playthroughs just to test out this butterfly effect system to see just how different each scenario in the story of Until Dawn can happen. So right off the bat, it is clearly distinctive that every character that you play as the player, they could all live or they could all die. It really singly depends on what choices you make and what dialogue choices you make as a character. So to make things more complex for the player, not only are you paying attention to the dialogue that whoever character you're controlling, because there's 8 playable characters, depending on who you are, when you have discussions, affect what happens, and also they have these things in the game, clues, which there are 3 sets of clues, because there are multiple things going on in the actual story of the game, and there are also these things called totems. So there's this high Native American tribal folklore that's kind of the premise of why things are happening in the game, and certain totems will show you a clip and like the smallest of things of a potential danger.
Like a flashback, but it's of the future.
It's a premonition of a potential future that you could, in fact, invoke, depending on your actions. So there's black totems, which are death totems. You have red totems, which are danger totems. You have brown totems, which are lost totems. You have yellow totems, which are guidance. And you have white ones that are fortune. So yellow and white are always going to navigate whoever finds them to something that's going to happen later on in the game that could help someone, guide them to something like crucial, like a weapon or a note or some type of clue that is very significant to that game. Or fortune might show a person who may have died or could die surviving instead. Danger totems will show you of a potential possible danger that's coming up for somebody, but that danger is not necessarily fatal. Losses show, like whoever picks up a lost totem is seeing a significant loss of a friend of theirs. So it is a death, but it's not your death. It's the death of someone close to you. And you do have two different columns of your personal traits as a character and your relationships to other people. So I believe, technically, that lost homes, depending on your relationships with other people, will show you clips for potential multiple characters, just depending on who that character is most friendly with at the time that you pick it up. Like I said, red totems are danger, usually the danger of the person who picks them up, but sometimes danger for other people. And death totems are only the death of the person who picks them up. So, like I said, every character has the possibility to die. They all can't die off the bat. Some are a little bit trickier to bring them to their demise, while others are a lot easier to. It is amazing. So let me tell you a little bit about the story, so that you can see how the butterfly effect really kind of fits into the universe.
And that way you can tell us how and why it's so amazing.
Yes, exactly. So in this universe, these eight friends have come to this remote cabin lodge because three of the friends, actually at this point, I guess it's 10. 10 friends go up to this mountain lodge, and three of the 10 friends are siblings. Two of them are twins and one's a brother. And I can't tell if he's older or younger. I believe he is older.
Okay.
But they're super mega rich. Their parents pretty much own a mountain. They bought this hotel and relodged it for their own personal, like, winter ski lodge home.
Okay.
And they have invited...
Uber mega rich.
Super rich. But they're super humble about it, at least from the introduction of the game. And they invite 7 friends up. And they pretty much do all the stuff that, you know, underage kids do. They make out, they drink, they're just getting up to, like, hijinks that high schoolers would do. Granted, you could tell by all the people who are up there that the people who are acting like these teenagers are clearly not teenagers, but that's beside them. Of these friends, you have several people who are in couples or kind of feeling each other, others not so much. And there are 2 twin sisters, Beth and Hannah. Hannah has this huge crush on Mike Monroe, who is, like, class president, seems like all the girls want a bit of him. He's dating this psycho bitch named Emily, who nobody likes, which I'll get into way further into my discussion. There's a girl, Jessica, who is hashtag or quote-unquote friends with Emily, and has figured out that Hannah's has the Jones for Mike and has decided to keep her honest that they were going to play this light prank on Hannah to expose this crush on Mike that she has, to kind of just, you know, poke fun at it and get it out in the open and maybe just squash it. So all the friends who were up there, outside of Josh, who is drunk at the kitchen table with his friend Chris, Beth, who has no idea this is going on, and Hannah... You have other pairs. You've got Ashley, you have Emily, Jessica, Mike, Josh, and Sam, who are involved in the hijinks. And Sam's not so much, because Sam is pretty much best friends with Hannah. And when she figures out what the other 6 are doing, she's trying to find Hannah before they can get the prank off. Anyway, they lure Hannah to Mike's bedroom, where he's like, we should, like, make out and see how hot and heavy this is, and, like, we could, like, get down to the dirty. And Hannah, being naive, begins to strip, and there's someone in the closet who's got, like, a selfie stick and his phone recording. There's several of the girls behind the bed. There's some behind some shutters.
You know, and pretty much the Friday the 13th setup.
Kind of, sort of. So literally, as Hannah's getting butt naked, or at least topless, somebody reveals that they're in the room, and then they all kind of pop out, and... At that point, Sam comes busting in, like, don't go in there, there's a prank going on. And Mike has a moment of, I'm totally sorry, Hannah, that I went with this. And Hannah, being completely distraught over the fact that she thought she was getting some alone time with the crush of her life and realizes that her friends have betrayed her, she gets upset and she runs out into the snow. Because they're up on the snowy mountain, there's a snowstorm coming, and it has kind of, like, is hitting down on the house. And she runs out into the woods with no coat. Meanwhile, her twin sister Beth sees this happening, and this is when the game decides that they're going to let you kind of figure out how the mechanics work. So very much like Heavy Rain, you're walking through areas and interacting with things and seeing what things you can and cannot interact with and what will lead you to a potential crucial choice. Which then, depending on your control scheme, which you could use traditional controls, which are your right analog stick and your left analog stick, or you could use motion controls because it is PS4. They also have an element of if you're using a PS4 camera, like the eye thing, that if you put that on through your gameplay during certain moments of the game that could be seen as potentially scary, the camera will turn itself on and it will record your reactions to those tactics.
Nope.
It can. I didn't hook mine up, so I did not have that experience. But anyway, so during this moment, Beth has to decide if she's going to go out into the snow and find her sister, or if she's going to try to wake up Josh, who's passed out in the kitchen. I have not found that this is a significant change between doing one or the other, but for my initial clean playthrough, I decided to try to wake up my brother, because I feel like he'd want to be involved if our sister has gone out into the woods. I try to wake him up, he's too far gone, and that leads me to end up running out of the kitchen into the main lodge area where everyone else is running outside, because they have all realized Hannah has run out into the snow. Beth puts on her coat, and she then decides to pursue Hannah and try to find her before she gets too lost in the woods. And this is when QuickTime comes into play. These QuickTime events are a lot more hectic, to say the least. Like in most games that have QTEs, they give you clearly enough time to establish the hit of the hitbox or the proper note or the proper movement of the analog sticks. But they have put this element of a ticking, like a timer that ticks down. And the closer you get to ending the timer, the more ferocious the ticking becomes, which I have found is somehow linked to another element that I'll talk about in a second. But anyway, you go through the woods as Beth with all these quick time events, and you're choosing to follow shadows or noises, and eventually it ends you up where Hannah is. However, before you meet Hannah, you do encounter your first totem, and they haven't explained to the player yet what happens when you discover a totem. And Beth finds a black totem, which then does show her potential death. But she doesn't really react to it. And none of them really do when they find them, which I thought was kind of weird. But I don't know if it's because they find this totem and we as the player see.
I have a feeling that it's just you as the player see what could possibly be. And it's not the character. Because otherwise, they'd be like, whoa, what was that?
Exactly. They never do, which I thought was kind of weird. So I think that's really just for you as a player to try to help guide the story how you want it. Anyway. So she finds a death totem. We see her falling off a cliff and dying. And as she pursues through the forest, she eventually finds Hannah. But you find out that something else is also following the girls. And it clearly doesn't look human. It's looking at us through these like reddish type of eyes. It's monitoring our movement and whatever. And it's clearly out for hunting. So you think it's an animal of some sort, like a mountain lion or, you know, maybe a diseased moose or something like that. But you know you're being stalked by something. And it starts to aggressively stalk the girls. And the girls start running pretty much away from this thing that we don't know what it is yet. And they come across this cliff. And it pretty much has them cornered. And Hannah is behind Beth. And she's kind of pulling Beth. And they fall off the side of the cliff. And Beth is hanging on by this root. And you see some fire and then this weird masked guy who then reaches out his hand to Beth. And at that moment, you have these two choices that are happening on the right side and left side of your screen. And one is for you to let go and you both fall, or you drop Hannah and you try to reach up to grab the guy. In my game, because I did start initially playing this with you with me, Ninja.
Yes, I was there.
I decided to let go. And we both dropped instead of me dropping my sister and her plummeting to her potential.
Because you never just drop your
sister. You never drop your sister. And I wouldn't have, and I was never going to drop her in front of you because I would never want you to think that that's what I would do to you.
Damn right.
Because it wouldn't happen. I would drop us both, and whatever happened after that.
Thanks, sis.
I've done my due diligence.
All right, good.
I cry. At that point, both the girls fall. You see them fall dramatically, and then they both look lifeless at the bottom of this cliff, which then cues us into our first chapter of the game. There are 10 chapters total, and we encounter the 8 friends who are still living, because as we, the player, have seen, the two twins did not make the night.
Nope.
They died.
Yep.
And I'm using air quotes with that.
Falling off the cliff in a snowstorm.
I mean, and
hitting rocks.
Thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, like
usually
it's not,
ends up in death.
It's not the most gentle of falls. Like clearly someone is hurt and or dead or both.
There's death.
A year has passed and Josh is coping with the loss of his sisters and has clearly gotten to a point where he is withdrawn. No one's really seen him since. He's very withdrawn. He's very distant. He doesn't like talking about the situation, apparently. And the game cuts to the analyst, who I feel is a narrator, more or less, for us, the player, and not really for the characters in the game. And this is where a meta game is being played. So Dr. Hill is the analyst, and what he does is he literally facilitates these small minute sessions with somebody who we never see because they wear gloves, they wear a hat, we never see who's sitting in the chair. And he's pretty much trying to figure out what our anxiety is. And by ours, I mean us, the player. So they're really trying to use the science of fear to help mold what is fear, what is scary to us, so that it can be personified in the game that we are playing. And there are several times that the analyst is even calling it a game. So you can clearly tell that the analyst guy is not talking to, potentially, any of the characters that we are controlling, but is literally talking to us, the player.
Right.
And we go through series of looking at pictures and describing our emotions towards them. We are going through a book to show things that we find bothersome or eerie to us to help root our anxiety. Eventually, as the game does proceed, I think it's by chapter 3, when we have our talk with our analyst, he is asking us what our personal opinions are of the characters in the story and who we prefer over another. And they set up pairs based on who's interacted with who at this point. And you've had some control over the discussions that are happening. And depending on who you like versus who you don't like, certain events are then set into motion. And that could be really good or generally really bad. So going
make
back,
good life choices.
Exactly.
Literally, guys.
So we meet the whole game with Sam, who, like I said, was best friends with Hannah. And she finds it really weird that we are all going back to the place where the horrific tragedy happened. But she's hopeful that this might help Josh cope. She would like to see all of her friends and maybe get some closure on why they decided to prank her and stuff like that. But she does find it a little odd, and I don't know anyone who wouldn't. But
yeah, I would not go back there.
No, neither would I. And granted, the funny thing is, out of all the characters who make it to this remote lodge, we have Matt, who I was so worried for Matt when he got introduced, because Matt was one, a black guy and a jock, a football player, and at this point is dating Emily, who's a mega super bitch, like, such a bitch. Like, I was not happy about her at all. I thought she was too brazen. She said things to the wrong people at the wrong time. She rubbed everybody the wrong way. And I literally, after my first in situation with her, I was looking forward to watching her die. And
yeah, that's you know, the place like, you want to be like, in the game.
I
like,
am not
when
like,
does
I felt
this
like
bitch
a
die?
Vengeful god who was taking her wrath off on this poor defenseless human
character in a video game.
Yes, who's not real. And she's dating Matt, who was like the sweetest, caring, and for a jock, this is kind of really kind of weird, but like kind of in that High School Musical vein of nice and sympathetic to her, which.
Well, he's made that way, so you'll care about him so and be like, why
will.
Is he
and
with this bitch?
And you do. You can, and I mean, the minute I saw him, I'm like, and you're the only black dude here. Dead bro walking.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, whatever I do, you are making this. Even if you're the only one, I am saving your ass because you don't deserve this. Even though he was a part of the prank, so clearly he did have a cog piece to that horrible thing. So
I don't remember seeing him in the cabin.
He was the one who was in the closet with the phone recording.
Okay.
So he was involved somewhat. But anyway, as soon as I saw him, I was like, I'm saving you no matter what. And like, you're willing to like listen to this woman verbally assault you. She clearly doesn't deserve you. You don't deserve this shit. And like, and he's logical and he's, and they're all the archetypes that you find in horror movies. Like, you have your super slutty girl, apparently, who has a heart of gold and is actually really insecure. You have your super mega bitch, who actually is quite resourceful when she has to be, but doesn't like to resort to it unless it's absolutely necessary. You have your geeky, inquisitive girl who is way too curious and clearly deserves anything bad that happens to her because she doesn't know how to, you know, stay with the group, so to speak. You have your geeky nerd boy who's totally in love with her, but is too passive and doesn't know how to take charge. You have your everyone likes this kind of guy, but he gets away with way too much kind of stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
You have your clearly something is off with him, potentially his meds with Josh. Like, they do a very good job of making sure that all those stereotypes are represented in this
universe. Well, you pretty much just described your chaotic neutral, your lawful neutral, and your good neutral.
Yeah, yeah.
And then your
you
extremes
have,
on each of those.
You have your perfect foils presented in the eight characters who are on this mountain. And, like, everyone in the first chapter is pretty much meeting up with somebody else who's either like-minded or completely opposite, and you're seeing those interactions happen. And as that's happening, the butterfly effect system is also working. So while you're on this mountain, because through the narrative, you find out that there's a curse on the mountain. And I'm using air quotes with that because I'm not too sure how I feel about curse. But something horrible happened on this mountain, and this evil energy was released into it that has caused this traumatic experience. Through the Native American folklore that they pretty much shovel down your throat,
starting with the totems and running through the storyline,
you find out that, one, animals are sacred on this mountain. So anytime a character has a choice of interacting with an animal, it is you can either interact in a positive way or in a negative way.
In order to keep nature in balance. If you keep nature in balance, typically not bad things happen to you.
Everything will just stay as it is. However, dabbing in the negative or when you shift the balance, they have to regulate it somehow, and then something of an equal disaster or happenstance will happen to somebody. So one of the first encounters is Sam encounters a squirrel, and she has, I don't know why she has nuts, but she has, like, or she grabs nuts from the ground. And this is another mechanism that they use in the game, and it's like this don't move system where literally you have to hold your controller completely still, and you can't move outside of this frame of the light on your controller, or you move. And you have to hold still, and the squirrel can come over and take nuts from your hand because Sam is an animal lover. And when she encounters another friend, his name is Chris, he finds a gun range and is taking shots at some of the targets. And Sam makes a comment about, oh, well, it's a big target, so there's no way you wouldn't miss it. And then the squirrel jumps on top of one of the barrels, and you have the choice to try to shoot it or another target. And if you choose to shoot the squirrel, you do kill it. And immediately after Chris does this, which is something I actually don't like, because whoever does the action of negativity, I feel like should be the person who suffers.
Who feels the wrath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in that case, I had Chris shoot the squirrel. And 2 minutes later, a crow came and scratched this deep scratch on Sam's face. Which at first I was like, okay, so this bird attacked Sam out of nowhere, even though Sam didn't shoot the squirrel. I didn't appreciate, because it should have happened to Chris.
You shouldn't have shot the squirrel.
Right, exactly. But later on, believe it or not, that scratch on Sam's head actually did shift another really shifty, shady encounter that Sam has later in the game, which in my first playthrough didn't happen. So when it happened in my, because I went on Twitch and decided to do a all bad choices, bad run of the game. Because there are several trophies that require really bad things to happen to people. And these aren't choices that could just naturally happen. You have to facilitate them as the player. So me being someone who doesn't like to betray her friends or likes to assume something over another thing without proper clues.
You're being really vague right now.
I am. Because I want people to play this game and I don't want to spoil it.
But I can't follow.
Okay, so let me...
Less vague.
Let me go. So while these eight people are on this mountain, there is this horrible... There's always this sensation that something's not right, like at all times. Like, certain conversations are really too eerie, especially with Josh. Like, the minute I met Josh, I was like, something's up. Granted, he did lose both of his sisters a year ago. If I were in that state, I would be looking for sweet revenge. Like,
not to host a gathering of my friends to remember them.
Exactly. And granted, obviously he has a lot of resources because his parents are rich. They own a mountain. So it's not like he couldn't, like, get some illegal guns or whatever and take everybody out and whatever. Granted, when they first show up at the lodge, there's no power, there's no hot water, it looks abandoned.
And makes you think that, oh, they have completely abandoned this mountain, which, if my daughters died on a mountain the year before, you can bet your sweet ass we would not be vacationing in the spot where they died. So yeah, I probably would have sold the mountain, not kept it.
But they kept it, and it wasn't up to...
But they didn't keep it up.
They didn't either. They abandoned it on principle, but they didn't abandon, you know, their ownership of it. But there was no upkeep. None of the characters ever comment about the fact that there's no electricity, and there's no hot water, and there's no food, and there's no nothing, like, ever. Which was also kind of weird. And any interactions with Josh always seemed like he was talking in, like, riddles. Like, nothing was ever clear-cut with him. But anyway, everybody gets up to the mountain. Mike, who is Emily's now ex-boyfriend, is dating Jessica, who was the super tramp, who was all supportive of Emily a year ago. Emily and Jessica don't like each other and will scrap any time that they're together. And Mike and Matt, who are pretty much cool with each other, but will puff up their chests and get all alpha if their woman seems to be mouthing off too much, which I tested out a little bit through some of my multiple playthroughs. This altercation between these two girls leads to Josh telling Mike and Jessica to go up to a separate cabin that's a little way up from the main lodge so that they can just cool off 69 or whatever and then come down and be part of the group. So literally, the minute everyone gets together, everyone's splitting off, which I'm like, nope, not a good idea.
Obviously, none of them ever watched a horror movie ever in their life.
Never leave. But anyway, so they go off to this cabin, and they fall into a mine, get all these clues about this weird happenstance that happened in 1952, and find a couple of totems that are not particularly good ones, while Jessica is pranking Mike all the way up. And depending on how he reacts to all these pranks and stuff, he could get some sweet nookie by the time they get to the cabin. Or, through my first encounter with this, I fucked up too many times and Jessica didn't even take off her coat. So, my Mike did not get any nookie on his way up to the cabin.
Oh, poor Mike.
No, poor Mike. You. He kind of deserved it. Anyway, back at the cabin, you have Christian and Ashley. And these are the nerdy guys. This is the two curious girl and the nerdy guy who likes her. And
they both shy, nerdy guy.
They've been kind of circling around each other like, we kind of like each other, but we're not sure how to navigate this kind of thing. So they're circling like sharks on Shark Week. And Josh is pretty much like, you know, something traumatic needs to happen to them so that they'll just fall into each other's arms and, like, this union will finally happen. And it's such a weird thing to say. So clearly I was like, something's not right. Like, I was just not, I did not believe Josh from the minute I met him. And what happens after that is pretty much a series of events where a antagonist of a psycho is presented to people, and it proceeds to kidnap Ashley and Josh and put them in a Saw-like game that Chris then has to decide.
Saw the movie.
And it puts him in a decision where he has to choose who's going to live and who's going to die. And the game is really great about showing that there are some instances where the player doesn't have to do anything. There's a choice to do A, B, or C, and C is always do nothing and see what happens. So when this first big choice happened, I was terrified because I was looking down at the trap. It had these weird intertwining, like, leaders for this giant saw that was either potentially going to saw Ashley in half or Josh in half. And I was like, if I can just sit here long enough to think about it, then maybe something else will happen completely. And it doesn't. You have to make an active choice at first who you're going to save. And because I knew as a player that Chris was all about Ashley, I was like, sorry, Josh, you got to go. So I move my little thing over and, like, it begins to move. And then you have to finalize where it moves. And you're like, Ashley was super reassured that I wasn't going to choose her. And I pushed it all the way to Josh. And Josh starts freaking out because Josh and Chris are super best friends. And you see this saw literally go through Josh and saw him in half. Like, no black, no cut the black, no nothing. Like, right through the stomach, intestines everywhere. Like, it is brutal. And the deaths in this game are completely and utterly over the top and brutal and are there to make a point.
You chose poorly.
Yes, but no. After that moment, you start seeing Chris and Ashley bond, you know, over this traumatic experience. Chris is also kind of freaked out because he has chosen to saw his best friend in half for a woman he hasn't even hit yet.
And by hit, you mean had intercourse.
Be hitting all up in that sweet spot, essentially. And you see them getting closer and closer together, depending on if you chose her or not. But this is not the only trap that these two happen to fall in. At one point, they get captured again by the same psycho that no one else believes exists but these two. Because it seems like the psycho is really only focusing on torturing these two people, which doesn't make sense for the initial introduction to the game that we got as the player. And each chapter you play as a subset of these characters and you endure what they're going through. And there are two different stories going on. So you have the saw psycho murderer thing going, which is happening in the lodge. And then there are things that are happening outside the lodge. And this goes back to Mike and Jessica in the cabin because she gets abducted by what looks like a human. And through a series of quick time events, if you happen to successfully do them all, you will save Jessica's life. However, Pando was not that great with her quick times in her first...
You were not quick on the quick time.
I fucked up bad. And it actually resulted in Jessica's death. And literally, from the reviews I've seen of the game, literally two mistakes will doom her. So you really cannot afford to fuck up. And she's one of the first characters who can die in this scenario. But after that happens, Mike goes through several horrifying things where he's pretty much in this insane asylum. He's trying to find his way back to the lodge to tell people that, you know, Jess is dead and or missing at this point, where the psycho storyline is happening at the lodge. Sam at this point has taken like a 3-hour bath and has no idea any of this is going on. And she eventually does a whole tower scene where she's being chased by the psycho who is trying to abduct her. But he's not holding a weapon of murder when you encounter him as Sam. He's always carrying something that's going to knock her out. So you can clearly tell that unless this murderer, this psycho, is really about torturing somebody, that there's something off with this abduction and this horror. Like, it's highly staged, which, if you know anything about horror movies, you as a player kind of get that, but these characters don't. So you're seeing them to react to what they don't understand. So after all that's done, Chris and Ashley end up in another Saw-like game where literally Chris has to decide if he's going to shoot himself in the face or shoot Ashley. And this is a very important game in the game.
It's a very important game in the game.
Yes, because depending on what you choose to do as Chris at this moment can either fuck him in the ass or save him. It really, it's the thinnest of lines between his life being
How is it a thin line? I shoot myself, I shoot the girl.
Right. Well, like I said, there's something highly staged about all the stuff that's happening in the lodge. And my initial instincts told me something was up with Josh. So Josh literally, and I'll spoil this, Josh invited everybody up to the mountain to pretty much put on this elaborate production of this psycho in the lodge to scare everybody. And he's been taping everything since they showed up because he wants to humiliate them. He wants them to feel ashamed the way that they made Hannah feel a year ago that led to potentially Beth and Hannah's death. It's his way of coping with what has happened. But he doesn't know what's happening outside of the lodge. So he thinks no one's being hurt and nothing dangerous is being happened. Because the saw game that he rigged, that was a dummy of him that he just put his head on top of. So when it was always rigged to hit Josh's dummy. And it was never going to hit Ashley. Not that they knew that. And in the saw game, the saws that are coming down for both characters, they will never reach either of them to cut them in half, and the gun has blanks in it. So if Chris decides at this point to shoot himself, he just seriously ends up hurting himself and never Ashley. But in my bad run, I went straight to shooting Ashley, and it bit him in the ass. Because when the second horror thing that's being implemented in the game, which is the spirit of the Wendigo, which I haven't talked about, when that becomes the basic threat of the game, Chris goes out into the woods with this experienced guy to go save Josh because they've tied him up in the shed where the first horror game happened, the Saw game happened. And Josh is no longer there. And the Wendigo thing pretty much takes out the expert, and Chris has to run back to the lodge. And if you choose to shoot Ashley, she remembers what you did to her, and she does not open the door, and she watches you die.
Mm-hmm.
It's the simplest choice can fuck up anybody's Christmas. And I also will say this, because I've been running my mouth quite a bit. Sometimes saving yourself is the best course of action.
Except, you know, shooting Ashley. Because that will kill you.
Chris can shoot himself, which also...
Which doesn't save yourself, because the action of that would be that you were offing yourself.
Yeah.
Which makes your statement invalid.
In that situation... the thing I just said wasn't for that potential instance in the game. But Chris can shoot himself and not shoot Ashley, and the events will play out, and she will not feel like you betrayed her. Or you can choose to let the timer run out, too. And then something else completely different will happen. But when I said sometimes saving yourself is important, I'm referring to Matt. I'm going to say that. So I played my bad version on Twitch. Because like I said, I wanted to talk about that experience. Because I've never done a Let's Play ever, really. We've done like a 45 minutes with back when we looked at RDR, like back in like 2000 and whatever.
Yes.
But we've never actually done like a, I'm going to play this and I'd love people to like watch us play it. So I decided I was going to do a small Let's Play of all the bad things that could possibly happen in Until Dawn. I had about 8 people who came and watched me play it, which I thought was amazing, especially because I just kind of said, I'm on Twitch right now playing this game. And it was early in the morning. So, you know, for the 8 who hung around with me for like the 6 hours that I played it, because I did take some breaks in between, I appreciate you guys sitting with me. But I literally went through the entire game not picking up any totems. I didn't pick up any clues because I wanted to see if the conversation dialogue trees would shift if no one had any knowledge of any of the clues that you pick up. And I was aiming to kill everybody in that game universe, in that scenario, because there are achievements that require everyone to die and for certain people to betray other people while on the mountain. And it's excruciatingly hard. It's so hard to kill everybody because in your mind you have an idea of, okay, well, this person can die here, so I can off them here. I can kill this person in this chapter. This person has to have this dialogue happen before this element of their death can happen that I want to get. And 2 of them will always make it to the last chapter of the game. And if you don't strategically do the right thing, and by the right thing I mean the wrong thing, at the right time, one of them will survive, which completely happened in my gameplay. I did not think far enough ahead, and someone made it out, which made me so mad, because it was fucking Ashley. And Ashley is a very interesting character in this game, because she is too curious for her own good. So as I was playing my bad playthrough, any encounter I had with Ashley, it was like, curiosity kills the Ashley. Because Ashley can only die in one chapter if she's too curious about something. Earlier in the game, if you happen to not kill Jessica, she does show up at the very end of the game and you have to navigate her out so that she doesn't die. But in my game, Jessica was dead. And Ashley's walking down this corridor and she clearly, air quotes, hears Jessica screaming for help. And if you have everybody with you, she's like, hey guys, I think I just heard Jessica. And they're like, go, if you want to go investigate, go, but we're going this way. And Ashley has a choice to investigate the sound or rejoin the group. Anytime a character gets separated from the group, you know it is death time. And I was like, all right, Ashley, it's time for you to die. Because at this point, it was just Ashley and the 2 who make it to the very last chapter. So it's like, time to kill you off. So I have her investigate the sounds. It brings her to this room where there's this trap door and something is pushing on the door. And you have to open the door to initiate the death. And I was looking for a totem because I knew there was a totem in the room. And I went too far to the right and she managed to jump down this hole instead and never opened the door. So she was alive.
So now, you messed up trying to be all totem collector.
I was. If you're going to collect all the clues and you're going to collect all the totems, it needs to be a totally separate run through from when you're murdering everybody, because literally the simplest twitch of a controller will leave someone who let Chris die, and literally it wasn't even like a, oh no, I can't open the handle. She has her hand on the handle, and she's refusing to turn it. And she watches a Wendigo rip off Chris's head and then throw it at the door. And then somebody shows up and is like, oh my god, I can't believe that just happened. And she's like, I was too late. Bitch, no, you weren't. You had like 3 minutes. You could have opened that door and let that motherfucker in, but you didn't, because he pointed a gun with blanks at you. Not that you knew there were blanks in there, but you're letting your emotions control your situation, and the dude you were feeling for, his head's now gone because you're a bitch. And I was totally ready, because like, it was such a shady thing to do. Like, I was like, I can't wait to kill you now, Ashley, because it wasn't even like you like fake tried. Like it wasn't like she was in an elevator and Chris was trying to make it to the elevator and he was like, hold the elevator. And Ashley was like, okay. And she was hitting the close button instead of the open, but making it look like she was attempting to help. Like, she couldn't even do that for a motherfucker. She was just like, nope, bye, bitch, and let the dude die. It was horrible. So when it came time for her to die, I was like, oh, I'm totally ready to end this, and I fucked it up. And you can't kill her outside of that episode, so I was fucked, and she was the only one who made it out of that game, and I was screaming to the top of my lungs, so the people who watch me on the Twitch channel must have gotten some laughs out of that, because I was so angry. Like, so amazingly angry over it. But since then, I have platinumed, trophied the game. I got all of the trophies. Some of them are a lot easier to get than others. I'd say general gameplay is probably around 8 to 10 hours if you're trying to collect everything and like trying to play with all the scenarios that can happen in one situation. It is completely worth the money that you'll pay for it until you've gotten all your achievements or your trophies. Just trophies, because it's an exclusive. But I don't intend on selling the game back. It's one I want to keep in my game library. I'd love to see them do... I can't imagine them doing downloadable content for this game, because it's really not too much that they haven't answered through other playthroughs of the game. But it's beautiful. It is immersive. There's a lot of jump scares, however. Like, yep, a lot,
which
more...
is why I did not play it.
There are more jump scares than a general horror movie will have, but that's because the game's trying to scare you, the player, and not
to influence your choices.
Yeah. So they're really trying to play on your instincts. So the only way to do that is to put you in a heightened state of fear for you to instantly react. Like, they want blank emotional choices. Like, they don't want you to sit there and be like, well, if I save her, then I can't save... Like, they don't want you thinking. They want you reacting. The game is all about reaction and timing and keeping a level head in a horrible, horribly stressful situation. So, I mean, I'm giving this game a 5 out of 5. Not that we tend to do a rating system here. It will not suck as a gift. If you've got the money, spend it. If you don't have the money and you feel like you could go a month without paying a certain bill, then you could do that too. That is the option I took, and it's kind of biting me in the ass. But I still willfully made that decision. And I hope Supermassive Games keeps this type of game up, because I feel like it gave us a lot of new things to consider in the genre that is survival horror. I mean, Heavy Rain was more of a suspenseful thriller, as was Beyond Two Souls was more of a supernatural thriller.
It was more of a psycho thriller, in that it was all perceived stuff in your head, and your imagination drew a lot of things for you.
Yeah.
And so, made you jump to some conclusions.
But neither of them, Heavy Rain nor Beyond Two Souls, ever screamed out survival horror to me.
Correct.
Like, there were elements
and
of
they weren't designed,
in both of them.
Mm-hmm. But neither were designed to
were
be
designed
that.
Designed for that intended purpose. Whereas Until Dawn is clearly designed to test your limitations in fear as a player, and seeing your decisions influence what happens to outside characters beyond yourself. And I love it. Underline love.
I can tell, because you've spent the majority of the podcast
talking about it.
Yeah.
It is wonderful. I want to actually write a full-on review, because there's a lot of things I didn't even touch on.
So,
today.
You better.
So, but that's what I've been obsessed with. And I've been watching other people play this game to see what different dialogue trees have happened through their games. And everyone's dialogue has been different from who I've watched play. Markiplier has gotten different responses from people and has gotten certain characters to do things that I didn't think they could do in the game, which doesn't make sense because I don't know what he's done different from what I've done differently. I haven't seen anyone do a full, I'm going to do all the wrong things in a gameplay. Like, I've seen people completely focus on fucking up relationships between Chris and Ashley or Emily and Matt, but, like, I've never seen someone, like, I'm just going to do everything wrong. All the wrong things.
I
tried to and still fucked up. Like, that's how hard it is. But it's fun. I enjoy playing it with other people. I felt far more courageous about making bad choices. I would honestly just say, if you are a big animal lover the way that I am, I think your hardest choices in the entire game will be when you have to hurt animals for the sake of the balance being off. Because I didn't. I didn't want to shoot that chipmunk squirrel. I didn't want to hit that bird with my snowball. I didn't want to chop that, you know, I didn't want to rip that deer's head off. And then I also didn't want to take that axe to that other deer. And I also didn't want to, like, punch that wolf in the face. Like, they were all, those were the things I struggled with doing the most, was harming the animals over the people, which clearly says something about my trust and faith in humanity.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Like, I was like, guys, I really don't want to hit this bird. I really don't want to punch this. I don't want to punch this wolf. Oh, Mike punched this wolf. Oh, that's so bad. Oh my God, I'm going to hell. Like, it was a fun experience. I will never go to a mountain with 8 friends, especially if I'm the only black person there.
Yep, don't. Fuck
that noise.
Correct.
If anyone has a chance to give me a flare gun, they better fucking give it to me. And if I have to save myself over saving another cocky-ass bitch, Emily, I'm talking about you, whorebag. I'm letting you fucking drop. Matt doesn't deserve your bullshit. He's sunshine.
Okay, are you done?
Hashtag I have a crush on Matt. Anyway, but that's my rant, my love/hate rant, more love rant than hate, of Until Dawn. It is, like I said, a PS4 exclusive. Get your hands on it. And this is an experience more than a game.
Truth. Because it does definitely run out more like a movie experience. I would say as far as like the gameplay goes, it is exactly like Heavy Rain in that you are making decisions in a choose your own adventure. It just happens to be a survival horror focused.
I mean, when I got it initially, I went back to the Esh home base and I was like, I want to play a little bit of this while I help you do your thing. And Ninja was like, totally cool. And I'm like, now there's some jump scares from what I've seen, but it's gonna be fine. And I played, I think, pretty much till the middle of chapter 2 before I like helped her do her like project she asked me for. And she was like, I'm really kind of interested in this game, but I also don't like those jump scares.
Correct. And that's what's going to keep me from playing this game. And those are my exact words, because as far as the story goes and the way that the mechanics work, Until Dawn is right up my alley. The problem is the jump scares. I don't enjoy jump scare games. And when that is a major mechanic of your game, that keeps me from playing the game. I don't mind psychologically being toyed with, but what I do not enjoy in any way, sense, or form, the jump scare. I find that it just takes away from me being drawn in because it's off-putting for me. When I get a jump scare, it immediately puts me in reality and I go, okay, not anything that I want a part of, and my brain turns off and I get completely disinterested. And so after the second one, I was just like, nope, you do your thing. I'm going to be focused over here. And I stopped paying attention to what you were doing, even though the game is beautiful and it's written really well and it is very crafty in how it guides you through it. But the jump scare was the line for me, and it is always the line for me in many games.
And there's like, I want to say there's clearly like 12.
Mm-hmm, easily. You know, there are even jump scares that have happened in some action games that I've played that have almost made me stop playing the action game. And it's just because, again, it pulls me out of the experience. There's one in Gears. I forget which Gears game it is, but you think that you're done with everything and then a locust pops out of no place and it starts a quick time event. And if you're not quick enough, you die and then you have to do it over again. And it was just enough. Like, if there had been a couple more of those in the game, I never would have completed the game because that you lose me at the jump scare. And it's not just in the video games. It's also why I don't watch horror movies, because you lose me at the jump scare. and I want no part of it. So I'm glad that you completed it. I really wish that it had fewer jump scares because I would like to attempt it because you started it on my PlayStation. Every time I log in, I see the save game, you know, sitting right there, and I'm like, I could get it digitally. And then I tell myself, no, I won't finish it because of the jump scares. So there's no reason to do that. So instead, what I picked up, and unfortunately don't have the time to talk about the way that I would like to in this podcast. So I'll
still have time for your 5 minutes with Destiny?
Barely. So I'm going to allude to it this week, and we'll talk about it next week as well as some other things. But I really wanted to play another choose your own adventure game, and I wanted something where my choices would affect, because I really do enjoy the butterfly effect type mechanic in a game. So I finally picked up Life is Strange, also on the PlayStation 4, to play through. And it is a game by Don't Nod, which I love those guys.
I love their logo.
It's just perfect. You know, anytime you're clever enough to come up with a cool-looking palindrome, you have my attention. But Don't Nod Entertainment...
Like Taco Cat. Taco Cat's a palindrome.
Yes, Taco Cat is. But the game is released by Square Enix, so it's a beautiful-looking game. And I can't go into all of it, so I'll hold it for next week. But we are going to talk about life for a awkward, introvert, teenage girl.
Hipster.
Named Max. Max really isn't a hipster. Like some of her...
Wait, she is.
Hold on. Max is not a hipster, because if you're a hipster, you're confident. And Max is not confident. So she is a talented, educated introvert, and she is very much into photography, and
very much so. Like, she could just screw cameras.
Some things happen to Max that, you know, you think that you're just a young introvert, hasn't really grown into her own skin yet, kid at a prestigious school, and then some things start happening around Max and to Max, and the choices that you make do, in fact, affect your game. And there's no do-over. In that, there is a do-over because Max has the ability, she finds out accidentally, to rewind time. And she can do it initially as you're playing through the game. It seems at will. But there are times when using the power starts taking its toll physically on her body and she can't use it at will. And so you have to rely on your memory. And this is one thing that I really didn't take into account in the game, but we'll discuss more in depth next week, that anything that you investigate that is a written thing, you better keep track of that. Because two episodes later in the game, because it is episodic, very much like Telltale Games. So right now there are 4 episodes of Life is Strange out, with the 5th coming. And I believe the 5th is the final chapter of the game. Things that you looked at and you maybe captured in your journal are things that will come back to haunt you, possibly, later on in the game. But it very much is a very true butterfly effect, in that once a decision is made, that decision does have ripple effects that change some things down the road. So I have 3 episodes done. Episode 4 is on deck for me to play. So when we talk next week and I go first, I will be talking about Life is Strange and my thoughts about it. So
I played it too, so it could be a group discussion.
Yay! Yay! I talk more. So now, since we're just about out of time, I'm going to do my 5 minutes of Destiny segment. And so here's the deal. Panda has her timer.
Yep.
Okay. She is ready. So when I start talking, the timer's going to go off and she is going to stop me.
Oh no, I have the most annoying buzzer. and it's going to go off. And I'm going to put it right up to the microphone when you're done.
And
I won't stop it till you stop talking.
So there's that. So with that said, I'm about to talk about Destiny. So here's 5 minutes of Destiny. So this week, Bungie did another live stream. As I mentioned in the big Destiny episode, they are doing live streams every week until The Taken King comes out on 9/15. And they showed off some of the new PvP maps in the live stream and then sent out their weekly notes. If you're a subscriber to the Bungie emails or you are part of a clan, so you have your account connected to BungieNet, you know, every week they put out updates and things that are coming. Well, they put out a big one this week, guys, because a big chunk of all the things I talked about in the big Destiny episode a couple of weeks ago, a big chunk of those things are actually going live on Tuesday. That's right, going live on 9/8. Now, the DLC itself still is not dropping until the 15th. So, the new missions, all of the new weapons, all of the new PvP maps and everything, all that stuff is not going live until the 15th. However, big chunks of things are. So I'm going to run through what is going down on 9/8. I'm telling you right now, if you're into Destiny, you want to be a part of it. So first and foremost, the level cap is going up. So for anybody who is under 30 right now, on Tuesday, you will be 34, minimum. Depending upon what you have in your vault and what you're carrying on you as far as pieces, remember how I said that all that stuff was going to factor into the new light level? Well, that's all going into place. And so if you've been hoarding your stuff like I told you to, you very well could be well past 34 come Tuesday when this update goes into place. So the level cap again total for the Taken King when it drops is going to be 40, and you need to be level 40 in order to do the weekly and the heroic strikes. So make sure that you're working on getting your level up. But they've changed the system, so going into place, quests are going into place, big ones. Any incomplete bounties that you have will go away. They're going to be abandoned automatically. Any incomplete exotic bounties that you have will auto-complete automatically, and you will get the weapon.
Nice!
So, if, unlike me, you're still holding on to that Thorn exotic bounty, knowing that you won't finish the Crucible stuff, just keep holding it, because on Tuesday, it'll magically turn into a Thorn. So that. Number two, the system for upgrading your armor and your weapons, that change is going into effect, so you won't have to scope out relic iron and spin metal and things like that. All that stuff is being deprecated. There's going to be one unit that they're going to use. Your motes of light are what you're going to use to give XP to your weapons. So if you got motes, hold your motes. You're going to need them motes. Mo motes. Get you some mo motes.
No motes, no problem.
Okay. Quests are going into place. So instead of having just bounties, you'll have basically mini storyline things that you'll need to do and pieces that you'll do in sequence in order to earn mad gear. So that stuff's going into place. You will have 16 bounty slots total on Tuesday. So bounties, and then some more bounties, which is awesome. Collections will be live in the tower. So if you've noticed that the special requisitions lady went away, it's because in the tower, you will now have next to the shader lady, the place that you can go to buy shaders and the place that you can go to buy all of your class gear. So those guys will be in place and they're near the big door that Xur is sometimes at. So that's real big. I think it's kind of flipping amazing. Vanguard Quartermaster. So the guy who I've never gone to because I don't do Crucible. Ronnie, I think like 9840 or 9940, I don't know. All your old materials you can exchange at him for the new armor materials. Okay, so this isn't going to go in place until the 15th, but instead of having to get like Crucible marks and Vanguard marks and then put on your class armor and get marks for the future World Cult, you're now going to have one set of marks that you can use to get all kinds of stuff. So even if you're not badass in the Crucible, you'll still be able to get some Crucible armor, but there will just be special gifts and perks and rewards that are given when you excel at Crucible stuff or when you excel doing things with your faction banner materials on.
All done.
like that. Time is up. So time that was 5 minutes with Destiny. Obviously, I'll have more stuff to talk about next week. And yes. Then, after Taken King comes out, I will get to actually do a Taken King episode, because we will both be talking about it. Hell, we might even live play. You don't even know. It could go down like that. We'll just have to see. But, yeah. Big things popping. 9-8. So, we are out of time on this podcast. So, I will say now, if you enjoyed everything you heard, and you really should have, because even I was impressed with Until Dawn, and it is not my wheelhouse of a game, make sure that you subscribe to our podcast and check it out each and every week. You can find the podcast at our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. You will also find the podcast in iTunes, either on the desktop application, or if you're using your iOS device, in the podcast app by searching for Electric Sisterhood or Eshcast and subscribing. You'll also find the podcast in the Microsoft Store. We're also on Stitcher Radio, and pretty much any search engine that exists out there, you will find Esh on. So make sure you find the cast, subscribe the cast, and you will get every episode that we put out the moment we put it upon the web for consumption. So do that. And then make sure that you're checking out the other shows that are being created by everybody in our network. We've got a great group of people talking about all kinds of really interesting stuff. So do yourself a favor. Make sure that you check in on No Borders, No Race over at B3Crew.com, hosted by our homeboy KBD, talking about all things indie music, pop, rock, theater, movies, manga, anime, you name it, KBD is on it. So check that out. Also, check out geekagro.com. Still on hiatus, but we'll be coming back. And if you enjoy EDM, trance, trap, all that stuff, including Deep House, then make sure that you check out geekagro.com, because there's some great playlists that are put together over there. And then, on Thursdays, also still on a partial hiatus, but coming back soon, The Issues Guy with The Issues Program. Going to be changing some things up. So recap this, recap that, put it in your mental bookmarks. It's going to be cool. It's going to be a lot of great stuff about some really great shows. So if you're into Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, Fear of the Walking Dead, like all that stuff, you're really, really going to enjoy what The Issues Guy is doing at Recap This, Recap That. So make sure that you check out the issuesprogram.com now, because when he comes back, it's going to be a house of fire. And then also part of the family, definitely make sure that you check them out. We love the homies at the Structure Network, structurenetwork.com. I'm talking every nerdy thing you can think of. TV, wrestling, comics, anime, video games, board games, unboxings, live play, twitching. I can't even keep up with everything that's happening over at the Structure Network. So you subscribe to their page and check out their podcasts. Oh, by the way, I happen to be on the Sensational Squad, which is one of them. And I guarantee that you will have a phenomenal, phenomenal week entertainment-wise. So with the recaps done and all that stuff and the business put to bed, it's the time on the podcast where I turn to my sister and I say, hey, yo, sis.
Yes?
What shit you digging this week?
Until fucking dawn.
Of course you are. Of course you are.
Until fucking dawn.
All right, okay. I think
until dawn?
Yeah, I think we all got it.
What shit are you digging this week?
Mochi, because I love mochi in my face. Okay. It's delicious. So with that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, guys.
Peace.